Ladies and gentlemen, everybody within the sound of my voice, this is the Les Boogie One-on-One Show right here on Fresh Nation Radio. We are back again tonight for another exciting episode of this show, the Les Boogie One-on-One Show. As promised, we bring you a diverse guest list. We do information. We do current news. We interview entertainers. We just do everything around the globe. This is community radio at its very, very best. And tonight is no different. We had great shows in the last 2 weeks, informational shows, bringing in a lot of great information that people need to hear. Once again, this is the Les Boogie One-on-One Show. Let me tell you that we come on every Saturday morning on Fresh Nation Radio from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. So you can hear the repeat of this show. And we're on every podcast that you can possibly think about. iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Podbean, Samsung, Spotify. You just look for us, and then we have two pages on the Facebook page. Our Facebook page is the Les Boogie One-on-One Show, and it's also Fresh Nation Radio. So just look for us. Our links are up, and Fresh Nation Radio runs 24/7, 7 days a week. And we're excited tonight. We are excited tonight. We're going to learn some information. We have a special guest coming on, and he's going to talk a little bit about financial literacy, and we'll bring him on in a few minutes. But before we do that, we have the regulars in the house. I got my team with me, as always. Without them, show's not the show. I want to introduce once again, if you don't know, Ms. Dahlia Manette. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm great.
Excited about the show. I am excited about the show. That's all I can say.
Okay. That sounds good. That's good. And then my partner, resident comedian and historian, my brother Tattletale. What's going on, man?
What's up, world? How's everybody doing out there? I had a rough day. Do I look okay? My eyebrows are straight. Everything good?
Everything's good.
Huh?
I said your makeup.
I don't know, man. I don't want to comment on that. That's
yeah. You know, I be using this horror show makeup. You know, because the good stuff I can't afford it. So I just go to the Halloween store and do the best I can. You know.
Well, not bad. Not bad. How you feeling today?
I feel bad, but I'm doing good. You know my motto.
And I heard you bad, earlier talking good. About there was a major accident. Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, first of all, my condolences to all, you know, the families and loved ones that lost family members. It was a barge in Baltimore Harbor in the wee hours in the morning. Like 1:30, and the barge it was extremely loaded to the hilt with containers, and when you look at those steel containers, and the size of that barge, when it hit that bridge support, I mean, within seconds, not minutes, within seconds, the bridge just totally went down. Totally collapsed. Yeah. Wow. Totally collapsed. Yeah. I mean, it was so quick, you know. It's just unbelievable the way that bridge went down like that. Unbelievable. Right. And like I said, you know, hey, my condolences goes out. You know, oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, just a tragedy. Also, yeah. Want to give a shout out to, I want to give a recognition to the young man, young police officer, lost his life, I think it was yesterday.
Right.
I want to rest in peace to him and condolences to his family and loved ones, too. It happened in Queens. And also want to talk about, I think we had the Queen of Soul had a birthday. I think it was yesterday or the day before, Aretha Franklin. Let's shout her out.
Mm-hmm.
Happy birthday, mm-hmm. Aretha Franklin. Yeah. So we got an exciting show tonight. Now, but we have a special guest, too. Another special guest. Our executive producer is in the building with us tonight. From the Fresh Entertainment Media Group, who is our sponsor and who is the executive producer of the show. And the president of that is none other than Jimmy Jones. What's going on, Jimmy?
Hey, how y'all doing? Good evening, everybody. Glad to see you. I don't get to share the spotlight with you that often, but this is going to be a good one for us. We need to do this. This is very important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, financial literacy is like major. So let's get this thing going, man. I can't stay in my seat. I'm ready to go.
I see.
Any money?
You got his glasses on. He's ready to go. Oh, yeah. But let me just ask you this. Jimmy. You met this gentleman. This is your invite. You met this gentleman. Tell us a little bit about that first.
Okay, well, meeting Tom was amazing the first day. Because when in the business that I'm in transportation, as you know. Those of you that don't know, I'm in the transportation business. And I met him, I was driving him, and we just started chatting right away. Right away, talking all good stuff, talking about our past. You know, I'm a couple of minutes older than he is, but he's a great guy, and he hit me in the right spot. And I picked him up again recently, and he just told me about this literacy thing for financial literacy, you know? He told me about it, and I said, yo, listen, my brother runs a radio show.
Right.
I need you to come on and share what you do. And here we are.
Without further ado, let's bring Tom to the stage. Come on, Tom. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Les, how are you? Thank you so much. Jimmy, great to see you. Great to meet Dahlia and Tattletale. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Thank you. Right. Thank you for coming.
Let's get into this. Let's talk money.
Yeah, let's talk money.
That always makes me happy.
All right. I want to have a big shout out for Jimmy for putting this together. We did have a couple of good conversations about financial literacy, and I try to give him a little understanding of what we try to do here at MassBet Federal.
Wow. MassBet Federal Savings. Where are you located, Tom?
We have 6 locations. Our main office is in MassBet, Queens, right on the side of the Long Island Expressway at 69th Street. So okay. We're just 3 miles east of Midtown Manhattan, but I like to say we're a lifetime away from the city. So MassBet is a very nice neighborhood where we have a strong connection to our local schools and our local churches, and we try to give a little bit feedback on really what community banking should be. I think it's kind of lost focus over the years, and I think it's time to get the word out that you know, we have to be back out helping people understand how to save money and how to really invest in things that are important in their lives.
That sounds really, really great, and we're excited tonight. I need you to explain to us, what is financial literacy? Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. Financial literacy is, when you get down to the basics, it's having enough money to survive, having enough money to feed your family, to take care of the things that are most important to you, your loved ones around you, and understanding that not everybody out there is there for your best interest. So you need to invest your money safely, and you need to put it into financial institutions that are secure. There's been a lot of bad news lately with some of the financial institutions, those that that failed last year. New York Community Bank had some issues the last couple of months ago. They seem to be back on their feet, so that's good news. But for folks that are just trying to save a couple of dollars and make sure that they have enough for their retirement, I tell young people all the time, and you know, I'm a gray head man, and they look at me like, you know, why am I listening to this, grandpa? I'm not a gray head.
Right.
We don't know. But I said, you know, you got to look forward to the future, because if you want to save money, you have to start it now. You need to have a nest egg that you start to build today, so that you can have enough money to have for your family, for your spouse, or for whatever your situation is. And for everyone, you know, financial literacy is a little bit different because their situations could be different. We teach in many of the high schools in our districts in Queens County. And again, all of our locations are in Queens. So, you know, I do get out to Nassau County or up to Westchester, but for the most part, we try to stay within our lending area where we have our mortgages. You know, you want to make sure that people are looking at their own situation and preparing a budget. That's the first thing that we ask them to do. When we go to the classroom, we'll actually have a slideshow that will show a budget, you know, a sample budget, and say, okay, here's the money that you should be bringing in if you have a part-time job or if you have a scholarship or any other types of income. And then here are your expenses. What's the most important? Is it your rent? Is it your food? Making sure you can pay for your cell phone, your car insurance, whatever your expenses are. And at the end of the day, we say, just make sure there's a little bit of savings in there and put it somewhere that you don't have such immediate access. That's one of the big things that I'm seeing that young people are struggling with. You want to make sure that you can put the money in, but it might be a little bit more difficult to get out.
Get it out, so, yeah.
You know, and that's how it kind of builds wealth, and that's the most important part.
Right.
Very interesting. Now, I saw where you talked about, naturally, it's the best thing to do is to learn this early on in your life, learning how to use, you know, how to save your money, how to actually use your money for the right things, like you just talked about. But I'm going to tell you something else. It's not just for the young. There's a lot of older people need to get some financial literacy as well, because that's the biggest problem, is trying to make ends meet. Right. So when it comes to young people, you say you're going to the schools, you go to the schools. Mm-hmm. What type of reaction are you getting? Are they paying attention? Are they taking it seriously?
It's so funny to say that, Les, because the first time we walked on campus, we did this as a test at a university, and we go into the business school, and there was about 50 students. I never expected for 50 students to be there first time. So we get up in front, and I do my first part to tell about the bank and my own personal story, and then I start to let some of my other team members build upon that. And after I did my little spiel, I sat down. I'm sitting next to one of my officers, and I said, "They're not paying attention. They're all on their phones. You know, they're tapping away." And he says to me, "They're looking you up. They want to know who you are and what you're talking about." So it was a connection right there and then of course we go through the whole session. They're usually anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour, and the questions at the end. I was stunned. There were so many good questions about credit and debit and saving for a mortgage and how much money should I look for when I'm looking for a new apartment? How much should I put towards my rent? I was taken aback. Wow. And this is going over 4 years ago. So I went back with my team and we huddled up and we said, you know what? We should have I call it our rock band. We should be out there on a circuit doing gigs, making sure we get out there to all these local schools and have an interaction with young people so that they understand what's important to how to save money. And what I've done is we've modified the program to shorten it so that we have enough time for Q&A at the end, because of course they're in the middle of the classroom. So especially if you're in high school, that bell goes off and all of a sudden the hallway is just people running in and out and they don't have time to answer questions. Right. So it's important for us to have enough time so that we can answer all their questions before they leave.
Okay. I think it's interesting that kids nowadays versus Gen X, because I'm Gen X, they're boomers. But I know that with boomers, you weren't really taught put your money in the bank, save a little bit. But Gen X, we were taught put your money in the bank, save a little bit. But we weren't told what do you do with it when you save it. So we would make these goals to buy crazy stuff and then have no money. And I remember in my 20s thinking there's got to be a better way. And I kind of found my way into, you're supposed to start a 401k. You're supposed to start these things. Now, I will say that for me, the 401k was a great savings. And I didn't know I would have to clean it out because of illness. But I always learned, have a 401k. And then as I got older, how can I hide my money so that I don't touch it? Because I'm the worst thief of my money than anybody else, because I'll make an excuse and I like shiny, sparkly things. So, what would you tell a student, even business students, because they're not that great either with their money. Accountants are not that great either with their money. What would you tell them for them to put that money away and not touch it? You don't have access to it. You're not able to get it unless it's extreme hardship. And you know, you've got to fill out paperwork. Well, how would you do that?
I mean, first of all, your advice, Dahlia, to put money in a 401k is the right advice. You know, it's the simplest way to have some deferred income set against your taxes. So the 401k program allows you to put money away that you don't get charged taxes until you take the money out after you are of retirement age. So after 65, let's say after 66 and a half, you then can withdraw the money at a much lower tax base or tax-free in many situations. I would, and I'm not a specialist, and I want to preface that. It's good to go in, talk to a specialist, talk to a financial planner, talk to a banker, have them explain exactly to the young people, to the person they're speaking to, what's the best way for me to save some money and not pay so much taxes on it. So that's the first step. And I think you're exactly right. The second part of that is it's the toughest question I get asked. How do I save some money? And I have a young person, Toya Brown, that comes in and she talks about budgeting, and I don't want to give her age, but she's a young person that is just starting out in her career. And what she does is she tells the students, I have a goal. I have three goals. I have a short-term goal. I have a, a medium goal and a long-term goal. And each of them are based upon months. So when the first goal is about 3 months, so in the next 3 months, I know I have to pay a couple of things. I want to make sure I save money for that. The next goal is anywhere from 6 months to a year. So, okay, there's something else I want to save for. I need to set up maybe a separate account so I can put that money into that long-term goal. And then you look at the final bucket, which is over a year. There is a goal that I need to have somewhere where I don't have exact access to that. Right. And it's really silly, and the kids laugh at me, but you know, community banks like MassMutual Federal have a product called a passbook account. And when you're all shaking your head,
we know what it is. We know what it is.
That was still around.
It is still around. Banks MassMutual Federal, community bank like us, you're able to put money in. But to take, and you can do it electronically today. This is something that we've worked on for a long time now. You can put in direct deposit. So if you have a paycheck coming in, you want to guide some of that money towards your passbook account, you can put that money in. But the only way to take it out, you got to come to the bank.
You got to come to the bank.
You got to come to the bank, and you got to have the book in your hand, and you got to say, I need to make a withdrawal.
Wow. So, I remember
old school. I love that.
I have to say that I take very seriously what you said. And a lot of it my mom said, which was spread your money around into different accounts. I won't tell you the real reason behind it, but it works for me
today.
It works for me today. So what I share this with everybody because you could take what you want from it. So I actually have four Fidelity accounts. Is it four or two? Yeah, four Fidelity accounts. I actually have a Navy Credit Union checking in the savings. I have my Chase, which my Chase bank is my bills and my fund. And then I have Hovia, which is another federal credit union. And that has, you know, checking in and savings. And then my paycheck goes out into these different accounts. So I know that what comes into Chase, that's my bill money. Whatever's left over my bill money, that's my fund money. All the other things I use to save, whether one is to go on vacation or whether one is to do, you know, to buy my house or whatever it is. They go out of, I don't look at it because I'm only looking at Chase. And then, you know, seeing it accrue with a financial analyst is a great thing when you start making these goals. And what's good about a goal is if you make that 3 month goal and you want to buy something at 3 months, when that 3 months come around, you probably won't even need it or want it.
That's very true. Very true. That's a funny story. I'll tell a quick story. My son is older now. He's 27, and I remember when my wife would take him shopping, and he would go into the store, and he'd be crazy about a gift. You know, he loved fire department. So he'd see a fire truck on the shelf when he was 5 years old, and he'd take it as, I want to buy this, mommy. I want to buy it. She's okay, fine. She's, let's put it down for right now. Let's do our shopping. Let's go around the store. And then when we're done finishing all the other shopping, we'll go back and grab the fire truck and we'll bring it to the cashier and we'll pay for it. If you still want it, that's when we'll do it. And every single time, by the time he got back around to the fire truck, I don't really need it. That's all right. I don't want it. That delaying that instant gratification. It's a great story.
Yeah.
Great story.
It is.
You know, I remember having my first bank, well, one of my first bank accounts. I was working at an advertising agency on 46th Street, Madison Avenue, BBD&O. We had the Pepsi Cola account. And downstairs was Chemical Bank. Remember Chemical Bank?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I was an American Savings Bank.
Yeah,
yes.
Man. I was young and I had my little passbook. And, man, I thought I was really, really doing something slick, you know. And I had my little money in the bank. It was right downstairs and I felt really good. Like I was a cop. So I remember those days. Yeah. But, you know, when you're right, it's to have a passbook right now. Yeah. To have that now, people don't want to go to the bank. You can sit home on your computer. You can pay all your bills. You can, put checks in. You can do everything. So, yeah, that's something else. You have to really think about it. I'm going to get in a car or I'm going to walk or take the bus to go to this bank. That's a good way to stop people from taking that money out of the savings account. I like that. Yeah.
Well, I take it your bank doesn't have Zelle, huh?
Oh, yeah. That too.
Yeah, exactly. Zelle is another. What we do is with Zelle, we don't allow that to be connected to the passbook account. You can put into your checking and it can move money back and out, back and forth. But setting up a budget where you know that there's a certain dollar amount that's going to be pulled out of your paycheck that goes directly into this long-term savings account, it gives you some peace of mind that, you know, one day when you look at it, you go, oh my gosh, you can see the amount in there. But if you want to take the money out, you got to get in the car, get on a bus, come over to the bank. Right. And that takes a little bit more effort. So I think that's important. And it's amazing. I'm finding more and more young people asking for some other way that they can save it. So old school works sometimes.
That's right. Hey, Tom, I want to ask you about this. The company Acorn, what do you think about them? Are you familiar with them?
Oh, yeah.
I do. I think that they're a good beginning for folks to start to save money. I have an Acorn account. I started it years ago. It was introduced to me by a young person when I was doing one of the presentations. And what I find the best feature is that you can take some roundup money. You can take a couple of, you know, if you do a purchase and it's you know, it's $5.50, the other 50 cents, you can say, put it into my savings account. And it works. Right. And you can double that or triple it, quadruple it, anything you want. And then you wind up saving money that you never even thought of. You thought about the loose change in your pocket, you know, instead of putting it into that big bottle that you bring to the bank and put it into the coin machine. It actually goes into your account. So it rounds it up. And that's a roundup service I think is great. I find Acorn's a little expensive. Some of their fees are their higher fees than I'd like to recommend. But you know, there's so many alternatives out there today. Mm-hmm. Nerd Wallet is another good one. There's a whole bunch of them that are out there.
Credit Karma
is another good one.
Charge a fee. They don't charge a fee at all. Yeah. And it helps your credit. It helps your credit.
You know, it's funny. I don't like to make too many recommendations for individual apps because I find that, as I said before, it's all about the person's own financial situation. I think it's better to talk about the budget, talk about your expenses, how you're managing that, and then you can find through your Google search or even your conversations with your friends, which one's better for me, which one's better for you, and then they make their own decision.
So what would you ask a student? I'm sorry, Les. What would you ask a student just graduating out of college? They have got student loan debts. They're trying to get a job, or they've gotten a job, which, you know, is not going to be high paying. These student loan debts come around in 6 months after you graduate. What would you tell a student?
What we tell students is to speak to your financial institution that holds that debt. If it's the federal government, there are contact numbers that you can talk to them directly and find out how that debt needs to be handled. The worst thing you can do is ignore it. And I find a lot of students do that. And they wait until they get a delinquent notice and all of a sudden they're in trouble. Because if it's a federal loan, even with a private loan, they can garnish wages. So the last thing you want is to have your money taken away when you didn't set it up to beforehand. So what I tell students is speak to the financial institution, speak to the representative from the federal government if you have a federal loan, and find out what needs to be done and how you can manage that within the budgets that you're creating. The other thing I've done is, and we do this at MassMed Federal, is we help our employees figure out how to pay for their student debt. And we have a program that will allow them, it's called Gratify. It gives them a portion of their paycheck going automatically into that debt repayment so that there's always some payment going through there. And we offer assistance when those situations come up where we can make an adjustment in some of the debt that they have outstanding. So there are companies out there doing that today. Not as many as I'd like to see, but I find that that's a really good way to get things started. And you can be part of the job interview. You know, hey, look,
federal student loans, because I have student loans, which will probably never be paid off in my lifetime. But that is an extreme. Sorry. That's called a PhD in getting all of that stuff. But the federal government, I tell people who ask me, if you're going to get a student loan, get a federally funded loan. Instead of getting private loans. Now, I'm not telling anybody else what to do. This worked for me. And that I could always call them and say, I'm having problems, and get it deferred. There's two different types.
Deferred.
And sometimes they'll give you up to 2 years if you keep reapplying for being deferred. But the federal government is the best If you have to take out a loan, the best institution to take a loan out from, because they will work with you on everything. And if you have to, you know, give them a call and tell them you have a hardship, they have forms for the hardship. It's very difficult with a private loan to get that same kind of service.
Right.
So really think about, you know, when you said to talk to financial advisors or your student guidance counselors, or your financial aid office, really, really talk to them about the implications, because student loans, you have them, they're not going anywhere except being paid off. And that's right. It. It travels with you everywhere.
Right, right. That's right. I mean, the administration today is trying to do some debt forgiveness, and I applaud them for trying to do that. But you can't rely on that. You know, you should really understand what it's going to cost you to get that satisfied. But please make sure that young people are thinking about it as soon as they get out of school, because you're right, that bill comes before you know it. You know, that 6 months or whatever the delay is, it hits you, and all of a sudden, it's a panic feeling. And that's the thing that I try to explain to students. And you know, I've been in banking now for almost 25 years. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser, and I have a story that I tell them when I step up there. And the first thing I say is that don't do what I did. I got on campus at my university. There was a representative from a bank that was there, and they said to me, "Would you like a credit card?" And I said, "Sure, I'd love a credit card." Yes. I had no job. And by the end of my first semester, I had $2,000 worth of debt. And I'd like this. I wish I could say I bought some good things, but at the time, it was quite trivial. A pair of tires to get to school. I guess that was a good thing for my car. Right. But other than that, it was trivial. But it took me 4 years to take care of that debt with the interest that was getting charged on it. It took me 4 years. I mean, this is the mid-80s. So $2,000 doesn't sound like a lot of money today. But back then, that was a whole bunch of money.
Wow, that was my next question, because I know there was some lessons that you learned early on in your life that kind of got you to where you're at now. How long have you been in the banking business? How long have you been doing this?
Well, first of all, I'm in the banking business all my life. My dad was a banker. My mom was a banker. Mother's a banker. We've been in the financial. We've all been at the same location. We've all been at Maspen Federal. So, and in fact, I always kid that if mom and dad didn't meet at the bank, I wouldn't be here. So,
how could you accrue credit card debt coming from a legacy? Oh.
My father never knew. Don't tell him, please. He doesn't
have no idea. Absolutely. Now, you know, another thing. Say someone, okay, let's get the young people. Let's get to middle-aged people that are still trying to get themselves together. What advice would you give them in terms of their financial status?
It's never too late to start. That's the first thing I say to folks. I know how tough it is. I see how bad the economy is. I know how difficult it is when you have a family, but just put a little bit aside. Put a little bit aside so that all the hard work that you're doing, the multiple jobs that people have. When I grew up, no one had a two-family income. It was just one breadwinner. That was it. Mm-hmm. Today, I'm so upset when I hear that. In fact, I remember having friends that maybe had a mom that was a nurse or whatever, and he had to go home to an empty house. I was like, an empty house? My mom was always home. I mean, that was her job to us. She took care of that. But what I see today is that young people are seeing their parents work so much harder to get so much less because it's so expensive. Make sure you put a little bit aside so that there's an avenue that you can have a nest egg at the end. I think the 401k option is by far the best I've ever seen. It's the safest way to build some wealth, and most financial advisors would give directions towards other options that might be available at the time. So,
okay, another question now.
And you can borrow against your 401k, and when you pay back, it's going back into your account. Even the interest that you're paying on that note or loan that you're doing, that interest is going back to your account.
Hey, Tom. You basically pay yourself interest.
Pay yourself interest, yeah.
Hey, Tom, sounds like she's looking for a job with you, man.
No.
A lot of information you might want to put out there.
That's all right. We're always looking for good person, help.
I'm just the average person learning. I learned late in life that, you know, you got to think about what comes next. I know for me, I can't get full Social Security until 70. I don't want to have to work a day job.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Yes. For 70 years old.
Wow.
The next
wow.
is 70 years old.
Mm. That's about another 50 years for you, huh?
You know, the other thing that I really want to mention too is make sure you understand the institution that you're banking with. I mean, not to badmouth any of the banks, but the mega banks, they're in for profit. You know, the banks that are traded on the stock exchange, they have shareholders that they have to pay out in dividends every single quarter. Look for a community bank that doesn't have shareholders. Maspid Federal, we are a mutual. We have no fees, literally no fees. We don't have any fee income. All of our retained earnings are gained through mortgages that we put on homes and businesses and such. So no fees at all. As a mutual, we're owned by our depositors. So anybody that opens up a savings account, they get a vote. You get to decide how the company is run. And our trustees, all of our trustees are account holders that have proxies so that they can vote for the way the depositors want the company to go. And it's a model that is one of the first banking models in the United States. It was started by Alexander Hamilton, the mutual bank. And it's been around, and it's been around ever since. And it's sad because in the decades till now, there hasn't been another mutual bank opened in 60 years. There was one up in New Hampshire. There's a farmer that started a bank just so he can help his other farmers and his growers borrow money so they can continue to produce food. He's the only one in 60 years that opens up the mutual bank. And I work hard in Washington and in Albany to talk about what mutuality means to banking and what it means to communities. We sponsor the Little Leagues and we hold free concerts and movie nights. During COVID, we had a drive-in theater through the whole bank. We set up the parking lot where people would take a spot, and then you had Uber Eats come in and bring in the popcorn and the candy and everything else they wanted. Played Frozen or whatever movie was popular at the time. That's what community banking is all about. And a mutual bank like Maspid Federal, we're really there for the community. So we're really excited about that.
Good. That's. Now, let me ask you this question. Rosalind Savings Bank, what kind of bank is that?
Roslyn Savings Bank is no more.
Oh, they're no more.
They were purchased by New York Community Bank, and they acted as a subsidiary for up until last month, when Flagstar then became the major player, and they took out all of those subsidiary names. So, and I remember Roslyn. They were a great bank. We had one right here near my house. And I live in Nassau County now, and they are just—they were fantastic. They were very similar to Maspid Federal. In fact, they were a mutual.
Right. That's why I asked that question. Yes.
They wound up. Queens County Savings Bank is another one that's gone now.
About Amalgamated Bank? Because that's a union bank. I used to have that when I went to Queens College.
Amalgamated was bought out. Yeah, I forget who bought them. I don't know if it was Citizens. They're gone. They're gone a long time now. But they're all part of that merger, you know. And that's the problem with for profit banks that are traded on the stock market, because they're always trying to get bigger and then trying to get better. We've been around for 75 years. We still have only 6 locations. we stayed the way we did it because we put all the money back into the company and pay our employees correctly and pay our taxes on time. Right. I don't want to badmouth credit unions, but credit unions are not subject to taxes. I don't know if anybody knows that. They don't pay taxes.
I was about to ask you about
taxes.
A credit union.
Wow.
They're wonderful, but they don't pay taxes. So, it's something where you need to understand that when I see a credit union buy a bank, I get upset because that means there's less tax money that's going to go out. It means all our taxpayers, we're going to have to pay more. So there's acts in Congress that they're trying to change some of those rules right now. But, small community banks like a mutual, we pay our taxes and we help our communities.
Okay. Now, I had another question with the 401k. I think a lot of people are under the misunderstanding that, let me ask it this way. With a 401k, do you have to have a job in order to have a 401k?
You have to have a job. No, you just have to have income. You need a financial advisor to set that up properly. You have to have a job that you're paying taxes into or from, I should say. If you're filing taxes, then you should be fine setting up your 401k. But again, a financial planner is the best one to speak to about some of those tax deferred options.
Okay, very good. Now, the other thing I want to talk about a little bit too is the elderly. The elderly. There's a lot of fraud going on. A lot of things are going on. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know you know about that as well.
Jimmy and I had this conversation when we were driving. It is terrifying what's happening to our older adults right now. There are so many fraud scams out there that I'm appalled that we can't protect our seniors better than we do. There are romance scams. There are check washing scams. There's business fraud. There's all of these different nefarious groups that are going after the older adults because they don't think that they understand how to save or how to protect their money. First of all, that's not true. Most of the older adults that I speak with are giving me advice about how to save money and how to protect my money. But there are some out there that are really struggling. You know, we have some family members that are dealing with dementia and they get a phone call and they say, you know, hi Nanny, it's Tom. I'm in, you know, I was just arrested and I need $10,000 to get out of jail. Don't tell dad, please. And I mean, I have a terrible story. I had a customer's mom come in. She wanted to take the money out of the bank. We wouldn't let her do it out of the savings account. She came back the week later and then went into the safety deposit box. Oh, it was a disaster. But the good news is she never sent the money. So it was a complete scam. Her grandson was never in trouble. I got a call about a month later from her son, who was I went to school with, grammar school with. And she said, I have a funny story, funny end of the story. I said, what happened with the money? He said, I was taking out dinner. I was setting up dinner. I went into the freezer to take the frozen peas out, and there's $10,000 in cash in the freezer.
Wow.
So I said, well, at least you have cold cash.
cold cash.
Wow. You know, I have to tell you that my uncle, I went through that with my uncle, and when it got to the point where he didn't even understand what overdraft meant, but he would get these calls about fixing up his website. And it was, you know, finally he said to me, I don't understand what's going on. Can you go through my bank account? And there were all of these debits for some kind of crazy website that he didn't even have, but, you know, he kept feeding into these stories. So I literally had to have him close the account. I had to take him to a new bank. Yeah. I had to make sure that he just had a debit card that was not connected to an overdraft. I had to call him every first of the month and say, what bills do you need to be paid? So I'd go in there and do the bill pay. He wasn't allowed to have checks. And Uncle James was in his 80s.
James.
Yeah, my Uncle James.
Yeah, I felt that in the heart.
Yes, and it was a struggle because for an elder person, it was kind of giving up their authority and their freedom and their to them it was giving in to getting old because now you have someone taking over your finances and then having to explain to him what overdraft meant and how if you go into overdraft it's a loan. It literally is a loan. So you've got that I don't know how much it is now, but I know at the time it was like $34. And if you don't put that money back in a week, they charge you again against that $34 because you're overdrawn. And, you know, and it built up to almost $1,000. And I had to go into the bank and really sit down and talk with them about what was happening. And they refunded the money. But, you know, I had to stop them and take off the overdraft. And I mean, we really had to work out a finance plan where he didn't feel emasculated. But yet his money was still there for what he needed to do. So we really
and that's you know there. You got a proud person in front of you. He's lived his life. He's had a lot of success, and to say that, hey, you know, you made a mistake here, and we got to try to fix this. It's tough. Mm-hmm. It's really tough. You know, I feel for you. That's a tough situation. One thing I want to mention is that there's a terrific website that I recommend to everyone to at least once a year go on and take a look at all of your credit scores. It's called www.annualcreditreport.com. It's a free service. You go online, you put in your personal information, and it'll give you a report showing what kind of credit you have. And if mm-hmm. all of the addresses that you've lived in, make sure they're all correct. If there's an odd address you never lived at, I had a work address. They had me down as a residence. That was wrong. I had to correct that. It gives you a chance to make sure you correct your credit. I've had many situations where people go to check their credit. They don't have a credit card. A lot of young people don't have credit cards yet, which I'm happy about. I'd rather give them a debit card, which is connected to a checking account. They already have money in the bank. That's a safer way to do it. That's the difference between a debit and a credit card. But they go online to annualcreditreport.com and they see that they have credit outstanding. So someone had taken their personal information, sold it, and used it, and now they have credit debt. And they are responsible for that. That's a really tough conversation to have with a financial institution when you have $10,000 worth of debt outstanding.
What do you tell someone, Tom, that's identity has been taken? Have that? I'm not quite sure you ran across that. What do you tell them?
It's the first thing we do is we tell them to fill out a police report. Call the police department, fill out a police report, then contact your financial bank that you're working with, the financial institution, and close the accounts immediately. Mm-hmm. Like Dahlia said, start a new account and then you can start from scratch and then you figure out all of the issues that are going on behind that.
But it also, can I just say, it also depends on where your credit was, your identity was stolen, because mine was stolen from the federal government. It was that big hack. And then it was stolen from Pennsylvania Unemployment Office. So it was, so for me, I didn't have to close any accounts, but I did have to make a police report. Mm-hmm. So now every year I had to freeze my credit. And so anytime I apply for credit, I have to ask them, what credit company do you use? I need to unfreeze the credit. I'll give you 24 hours. Because for the rest of my life, I will have to have my credit frozen because it's sold on the dark web to anybody.
Mm-hmm. That actually is one of the biggest tips that I give too. Always freeze your credit reports. You have to go to all three agencies. Yep. You got to go to Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax. But you should freeze the credit report to make sure that no one else is able to open up a new credit card. In fact, I had to make sure all of my reports were closed. And you have to do it annually, Dahlia. Exactly right. That's very important.
Yeah, that's good.
And information. I have to file with the federal government that they're still because they tried to steal my taxes twice. And it was the IRS who sent me a letter saying, "Did you file your taxes?" And I knew I didn't.
But
that's not a thing. And it's so easy. You have to be careful.
Yeah.
Tom, I want to ask you this. I want to ask you, with the financial literacy, when you go into a school or a group of people, can you kind of break down the conversation from starting to like how the program works, what you say, and how do you break it down step by step? Is that possible?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. The first thing that I do is I stop talking because young people want to hear from young people. That's the one thing. And I give them credit because the social networks that are established today where young people talk to each other either online or less so in person, but more so that they're all communicating of that same age group and they take advice from each other. And that's perfectly fine because there's a lot of smart people out there. But what we do is I'll have Toya come up and she'll talk about what a budget is, how to prepare a budget, what some of your goals are. And we do it with a little, Q&A. So, and we always have a little prize to give away. And yesterday we gave away Starbucks cards. So we had a $10 Starbucks card.
Wait, what school was this? So I can make sure. You give away
Starbucks. Well, you know Starbucks.
And I'll come to it and I'll bring Starbucks cards. I promise. So we do the budgeting first and we try to, make sure it really depends on the audience. If we're talking to high schoolers, we want them to understand that your financial life is going to change dramatically once you get into college, because all of a sudden you have grants, you have a part-time job, you have scholarship money, you have to figure out, or you have a loan, you got to figure out where all that money's coming into and what it has to go out for. The cost of textbooks, even online textbooks, it is staggering. Absolutely staggering. The food costs or transportation. So we try to set up these categories so that young people understand this is what my new budget's going to look like. And what we always do is we include some fun lines. I want to go. I gotta go for a trip. I want to go away with my friends. Spring break is coming up, and I want to go somewhere. Toy is funny. She always talks about her passbook savings account is a savings for a long term goal, and she wants to get a tattoo. I'm like, oh, Toy, don't. I know your dad. He's not gonna be happy about a tattoo. That's fine. It's a long term goal. She knows she's got to save for it. And it turns out, just last week, she told me she spent that money because she decided to go on vacation instead. Mm-hmm. I was very, very happy.
Better choice.
So that's where we start. We have that. So we're talking about budgeting. And then we bring up another individual who's the head of my credit department, Akshay Mahandru. And he talks about the difference between credit and debit. And he talks about good debt and bad debt. And he goes through all the different steps of how you need to find the right avenue if you need to borrow money. He talks about car loans and how difficult it is that you're spending so much money on a new car when you could have gotten that transportation in a less expensive vehicle. You didn't have to spend that much and allocate that much money for a brand new, beautiful car. It's okay. Mm-hmm. At that age, you know, you should be able to say, all right, I can work it out with a smaller car or a less expensive car. Right. He talks about what good debt is. Good debt is a long-term debt that has a low interest rate. And the ability to repay that without any penalties. Bad debt is a shorter term, but a much higher interest rate. So you don't want to have that term where you have to put so much more in and you're getting charged so much of the interest. So those are the two pieces that we really concentrate on to help folks understand. The biggest group of questions we get is all about their credit score. Students are very focused on grades, right? So what we say is, your financial credit score is your GPA for life. You need to protect it right from the start. You need to understand that you don't all start with zero or 300. You're starting in the middle, somewhere around 600 to 650. And no one's ever going to achieve an 850 score. It's just a range. Nobody ever gets that high. So anywhere between 600 and 800 is a good score. And it has goals that you need to achieve that. What type of credit card are you taking out? How many credit cards are you taking out? Does it make sense to even open a credit card? So all of these questions come up through that whole process. And Akshay is great at really explaining and answering all those questions as we wrap up. It's been great.
Nice. Very nice. Now, in your opinion, well, not in your expertise, not your opinion, credit cards, what would you say? How many credit cards does one need, or do they need any at all? And if so, how does one pick the right credit card?
I think everybody should have at least a credit card. Yes. Okay. I think that the way to start is you can go on your parents' credit card as an authorized user. And that authorized user then also builds credit score. Dahlia's shaking her head. Is that not good? You don't want your kids on your credit card?
No. I don't have kids, but I have seen that, what's happened to my brothers with that.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
That is never a good thing for the parent when the kid goes crazy with the credit
That's
card.
That's very true.
So
very true.
What they did instead was got him his own credit card and put a very low limit on it. So your credit limit was $200 or $300, and that was it. And then they would make them figure out how to pay that back.
Right. So. Yeah. And the idea of getting credit established is less about the fact that you have money that you can borrow, but more so that your credit score begins at an early age. And then that you can then monitor that and make sure that that credit score gets better and better over time. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of folks get multiple credit cards. It's not necessary. You get one or two, depending on where you're traveling or what you're using it for. Make sure the merchants that you're shopping with use it. I do think a debit card is also something that should always be in your wallet. If you have a checking account that you can utilize as your way to make payment, nobody carries cash anymore. I understand that, but a debit card, at least you know what the balance is. And when you put that transaction through, it comes right up on your phone and you say, okay, now I know I have less money to keep in that account. So a debit card is also a great way to control habits.
Okay, another question. Some places do not accept, like say when you go to rent a car, They don't want to accept a debit card opposed to a credit card. Why is that?
It's a hold. They're afraid that you may not have enough money in that account to pay for the damages on the car or what the credit card or what you use, what the credit use is on that card. So I've seen that before, that the credit card is the only way you can rent a car. That's about the only thing that I can think of is a car rental.
There's a way to get around that too. Discover has a debit credit card that you can use. Listen, Jimmy's like shaking his head. I am. Again, you can put money. It's not a savings account per se. It really is a debit account that you can use that at car rental agencies, because the bands that we work with, sometimes the musicians have to do that for their hotel rooms. And so with Discover, and if Discover watches this, you could send me a check for this, but you know, you put money on that debit card, and it looks exactly like a regular Discover card, and you can use that and have that money there. When you put that money in, you don't get it right away. It's on hold for a week. So this is something that you have to plot out, and you use that card at times when you need a rental car, need a to check into the hotel, and you have to give your card for incidentals. So there's always a way around that.
So you're saying that card gives you patience and tolerance?
It does. That's one of my many little tricks, because I use that to travel with, so I don't have to touch any of my other ones.
I got you. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you, Tom, myself. Mortgages, because I know you're a mortgage guy.
Yeah,
I have to talk about that, because there's a lot of predatory mortgage companies out there smacking people in the face. It's just insane. And my main thing is this. When COVID came around, they did this forbearance thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They didn't really tell people that like when COVID cleared itself up, they want all that money back right away.
Right.
I didn't feel that was illegal. I didn't do it, but I felt that was big. I found my way to pay my light mortgage and, you know, take care of it that way. But it sucked up my savings. Which I don't really feel bad about it, because I always feel like I'm a guy from the Bronx. I always feel like I can get more cash. You know, put the work in, you can make yourself some money. But these predatory lenders, man, have to be really taking good at that.
When COVID hit, we had a conversation with our board members about what we can do. And the first thing that our board members said to us, and you're talking about folks that are older, that have been experienced, a couple of attorneys, they said, you know, Massman Federal has been around for 75 years, and we've been saving money for a rainy day. It's pouring outside. Let's see if we can help folks. And we set up forbearance programs. But the big thing is that, Les, Jimmy, what we didn't do is we didn't ask for the money when COVID was over. We put it on the back of the loan and we included into their payments on a regular schedule. So when folks, and I would get the calls, oh my God, it was terrible. They would call me and say, Tom, you know, my mom just went into the hospital. We don't know if she's going to make it. She's at Illinois General right now. I know the mortgage is due tomorrow. What do? I said, the first thing you do is forget about the mortgage. You're not going to be charged any late payments. We're going to work with you, take care of mom, make sure she recovers well, and then come back to me and we'll set up a program. So we did all this deferrals to make sure that people were able to get themselves back on their feet and worry about their family first. And then when we saw the balloon amount that was going to be due, we said, let's just push that out, because most mortgages are based on a 15 or a 30 year program. So you can spread that out all the way through the back, and there's no additional interest charges to that. What we did is we did an interest free loan for anybody that took out a mortgage. And for us, we have 3,900 mortgages on our books. We gave out 1,000 forbearances.
Wow.
It was a big hit on our income, but it allowed families to stay in their homes, and that was the most thing that we were important about. So,
and the other side to that also, what is this thing? Modification, modification loans. My experience says that it's almost like one minute you're cleared to get the modification, then they call you back and say, you're no longer eligible.
Yeah. There's a lot of bait and switch up there. You have modification programs that are just an intent to get you into the bank and see if they can take more money out. And I really frown upon that. When we look at, especially now with the interest rates are as high as they are, most folks have mortgages that are a better rate, and they're not, they really shouldn't do a modification. They should hold on to that loan, pay a little extra. This is what I tell folks all the time. You have a 12-month schedule, right? Every month you're going to pay your mortgage. One extra monthly payment will shorten the term almost 7 years.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So if you have, you have a 30-year mortgage and you make one payment every year additional, right? 13 payments instead of 12.
Just one.
You're at a 23. Just one payment every single year. You have a 23 year program as opposed to 30. It's 7 years that it takes off. So that's the first advice that I give folks.
Never knew that. Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
I've been told that if you split your mortgage in half and pay it twice a month, that that also helps. Is that true? Because I didn't understand the reasoning behind that. So can you explain that to people? That if it's, you actually pay that mortgage note twice a month and divide it in half, not pay it twice a month, but divide it in half and pay, you know, the cycle of your paychecks on the 1st or the 15th or the 15th and the 30th.
Those are terms that have to be set when you take the mortgage out, though. You just can't start to pay that halfway. What you need to do is when you're setting up your mortgage, you ask that they should ask you, do you want it monthly, bi-monthly, or how do you want to make your payments? And you can set it up that way, and they'll adjust it so that it comes in faster at the beginning of the month and then halfway through the month, and you can make those payments that way. It's called an accelerated appreciation term. So it really depends on what, you know, the interest rates are set at, and that's how it pays it off faster.
Nice. Very nice. Tom, I want to ask you this. Someone interested in your financial literacy program, how did they get in touch with you? How did they get in touch with your bank? And then the other thing I want to know, do you have a website with this information on it?
We do. We do.
Okay. Can you give us all that information? Everything that I just asked you.
Our website is www.masbetfederal.com. And you can reach us at an email address of finlit@masbetfederal.com. And we can give you all the information about financial literacy. We have a dedicated webpage for our teens that have accounts with us. We also have the same for older adults too. We're redoing our website right now. So in the next couple of months, you'll see some really great upgrades on that. And if you have a school that you want us to come visit, please contact us at finlit@masbetfederal.com. And I'd be happy to bring my team down there. Bring the show. We'll bring the show on the road. That's what we do.
Let me ask you this real quick. You have literature that you can give to me? Because I go do a lot of events musically. I told you all about being a pioneer hip-hop artist that I am. I want to be able to hand your stuff out to our crowd. We have a crowd.
Absolutely. Yeah, we sure do. You know, and Jimmy, I had mentioned to you that if there's an event that you're looking for a sponsor for, we'd be happy to come down and sponsor that event. What we do is we'll set up a table and have the financial literacy information there. And folks want to ask us questions, we'd be happy to answer them too. So it's a good way to do it. So let me know if you need some support.
Gotcha.
Okay. Wow, this is great. And, you know, we're running out of time, and I can go on and on because I'm learning a lot, you know, a lot of questions being answered that people, some things I know already, but I want the people that are listening to really, really understand what financial literacy is about and that it doesn't just affect the young, it affects everyone. That's the way I see it. And getting your financial portfolio together, and that's what I like to say, portfolio, get that together, is it takes away a lot of stress when you have your money, right? I mean, let's keep it real. Sure. The biggest problem with our lives a lot of times is
our finances.
You know, relationships are breaking up because of finances. You know, you're stressed because of finances. So when you start, I have a son, 20 years old. Get it together now. Get it together now so you don't have to wait till you're 40 to get it together. Get it together now. This is why it's so important what you're saying and that there are banks and people out here that can help you and guide you. The information is out there. That's why this show is so important. We want to make sure that this show gets to a lot of people. And as my brother said, we're going to make sure that you get out, get your information, and we'll be talking to you about some events because it's real important to come into these communities. Community is what it's all about, Tom. And I feel the same way.
Absolutely.
Without the community, there's nothing else because everything is community. Everything is local. Politics is local. Right. Everything is local. You got to start where you live. And if you don't start where you live, then Everything else doesn't matter. So I thank you for coming. I really thank you for coming. Once again, repeat your website.
Thank you. Sure. MassBethFederal.com. www.massbethfederal.com.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Any questions? Tattles, are you quiet tonight? What's going on?
I was listening. Me and myself, I've had my first bank account. I was like in second grade. It was with the old Dime National Bank.
Savings Bank.
I started, you know, Well, I started very young with my financial portfolio. So as I got older, I didn't have to depend on no one else. And I've always made the right moves, you know. Doing that, I had my first house. I was about 22, 23 wow. years old.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know, we still do that. We still go into the elementary schools and we collect money for their passbook accounts or their savings accounts. So we have one of our bankers go in, we speak to the teachers and the parents know that that day we're going to have the deposit account ready. And they come in with a little bag of change and we put 50 cents into the account or $1.50 or whatever they saved that week. Every week we go into the elementary schools and we do that with our bankers and our young children. So Tattletale, you were right on the right road. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen, can you,
he met women and that kind of destroyed it all.
Oh no. What you do, you don't tell spouses all that you have. You always have to have a fund that you can get to if there's a problem. All right. If there's a problem, but fortunately with me, I've been married a few times and the women that I married, they also were financially savvy, you know, very financially savvy. Yep. And I tell people, if you're married, you have to have the right spouse to make things happen right in the financial sector of your life.
I believe in that. I'm married 35 years. My wife's looking at me right now. She said, good job.
Well, I said, hello.
Thank you.
All right.
One last thing for me. You. I have one of those water cooler bottles. I've been doing that for years. You know, I carry it out every now and then. If I can lift it, I put it on the hand truck, then I go dump it, then start again. But I'm bringing it to your bank. I'm going to start me a passbook.
Come on, we got it.
I still do that too. I will tell you this, Tattletale. That checking account that I say I pay my bills with, that is the account I show my significant other. They know nothing about it.
He heard you.
He knows about it now. He's gonna know about it now.
I've got 2 401ks. I like the credit unions because I can get a better deal with loans. The interest is much cheaper than your banks.
Yeah, the commercial banks. I totally agree.
Yeah, they're much cheaper. Bank. Yeah. I live in Pennsylvania.
Out there.
Oh yeah.
Let me know where you live. I'll hook you up with a good mutual bank for sure. I know.
All right. Good.
Comes along.
Sorry. One more thing I have, and it just came because something you said. Federal credit unions that you take a credit card out with them, and then you take a car loan out with them, and they hold that account. They hold that car or that credit card as one. What is that about?
Hold it as one? What do you mean?
Yeah, okay, if you don't pay...
What they do is... say you have a loan, a personal loan, a car loan, or say a credit card with a federal credit union, or the teacher's credit union, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They call it... what do they call that?
Is it a secured loan?
No, listen. If you don't pay one, then they can come and actually take your car because you didn't pay the credit card. Say you ran the credit card up and didn't pay it.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, they actually do that. Why credit unions got to be very careful. I forgot the term they
use. Never heard of that. Yeah.
It's what is it called?
Consolidated debt?
No. It's one rolls over to the next. So say you had an auto loan and you had that for 2 years. Now, third year, you get a credit card. Say you stop paying the credit card. They now come and threaten to take your car from you because you didn't pay the credit card. They actually do that.
Wow.
Think about that.
I would think that they would just roll that into your credit card note. I mean, into your car note and say, listen. Mm.
Right.
There's a way to solve it, but the idea of it being available for them to do that, I just felt that sounds illegal. I had a friend of mine tell me about that.
Yeah,
you know, I was doing this tonight.
You know what? It's in the paperwork. It's
in the paperwork. Said,
yeah.
It's in
the paperwork. Read all that paperwork?
I do.
I
negotiate contracts for artists. I know. I even tell them, give me the Carfax.
Right.
You know, you're fortunate to do that, but most people are so excited about getting the car. They don't read the fine print. That's just the absolute truth. You know. So yeah. So that's something to take a look at. I forgot the name of it, but I'll bring it back next time. But Tom, once again, thank you, my friend. It was nice meeting
my
you.
Pleasure.
Thank you for coming
thank
on.
You.
And
yeah, it was great. Yep.
We'll be in touch. We'll be in touch.
And, thank you.
I'll see you on your next slide, bro.
MassPeth Federal Bank, y'all need to go over there and see what they're talking about. They come out to you. I've never seen a bank do that in my lifetime. Come see me. Always had to
love
go
it.
See them. So we love you. Thank you, brother. Now. Thank you for coming out. Thank you for your team.
Bye
I see
now.
Christina.
Appreciate
and I see Gloria. I hope you hear me, Gloria. And Christina, I hope you heard everything, and it was a good show. Good show, man.
Good.
Thank you, Tom.
It was great. Thank you. Thank you. Take care, gang.
Talk to you
soon. All right. Good night. Okay.
Good night.
Yes, sir, folks. Well, now you know we have our own banker in the house.
There you go.
Listen.
Yeah, that was a